was on a Monday morning, just about 1 o'clock, when the great Titanic began to reel and rock. Then the people began to cry.
The sinking of the Titanic on April 15, 1912, was the biggest news story of its day, but people on land had only the barest facts about the tragedy at sea until 3 days later, when 706 survivors reached New York on the steamer Carpathia. What followed was an unprecedented media frenzy. WNYC's Jim O'Grady is here to talk about it. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Lance.
First of all, the Carpathia had wireless communication with land. Why didn't they use it to send more information about the sinking?
The ship sent some news, and after a couple of days, it was known that most of the passengers and crew had died, but not much beyond that.
Why not?
Well, the leading theory is that the White Star Line, which owned the Titanic, was trying to manage the story by shutting out the media. For example, a newspaper man named Carlos Hurd, he just happened to be on the Carpathia. He worked for a Hearst paper in St. Louis. Hearst editors in New York were sending frantic messages begging for news, but the ship's crew intercepted them, and the crew pretty much enforced a news blackout.
And did it work?
No, it backfired, because the public was just brought into a froth looking for details of the disaster, which was the largest in U.S. history to that point, besides war. And by the time the Carpathia arrived in Lower New York Harbor on April 18th at 9:30 at night, tens of thousands of people were standing outside Pier 54 at West 13th Street on the Hudson River.
Why so many?
Well, a lot of them were family members of passengers who didn't know if their relatives were dead or alive, and the streets were just jammed with them, like in the days, if you remember, after 9/11 in New York, when people were putting up flyers of photos with their loved ones who'd been in the towers and were still missing. But back then, outside this pier, reporters worked the crowd, and they were talking to relatives while they were waiting to catch the survivors coming off the ship to get their memories while they were raw. Because later, you know, some Titanic passengers, they sat down and they made recordings for posterity, and they tended to sound like this man in 1935 telling what he'd seen from a lifeboat.
Slowly, she reared up on end, till at last she was absolutely perpendicular. Then, quite quietly, but quicker and quicker, she seemed just to slide away under the surface and disappear.
So, Lance, that's haunting, but kind of staid and not so visceral. Many of the best stories about the Titanic were the first stories that appeared in newspapers that we can today go back and read.
So how did the press get the survivors' stories when they reached New York?
They surrounded it. More than 50 tugboats jammed with journalists. They went out and met the Carpathia in the harbor. Reporters with megaphones yelled up at the ship, offering $100 for eyewitness accounts. And photographers were using these flashes of magnesium powder that lit up the side of the ship.
So this was clearly a very competitive era in New York journalism, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could say it was Darwinian, basically. Because back then, journalism meant newspapers. This was before the rise of radio and movie reels. Newspapers were the only game in town, and there were dozens of them in New York in multiple languages, coming out 3 times a day and extras on top of that. Mitchell Stevens is a professor of journalism at NYU and an author of the book The History of the News. I asked him what that was like.
It was cutthroat competition between these newspapers for stories and to be first on the street with stories. So the streets were full of newspapers, you know, being hawked all day long. And this was an intense competition.
Stephen said at this time, the U.S. had the highest per capita newspaper circulation in the world. Okay, so two of the heavyweights in New York at that time are Randolph Hearst's New York Journal and the up-and-coming New York Times.
So how did they battle each other for the Titanic story?
Okay, so the editor of the Times was Carr Van Anda, and he decided that the prize interviewee was a guy named Harold Bride. That was the Titanic's 22-year-old wireless operator. So we tend to think of journalists paying for a source for a story as a recent development, but Van Anda was shrewd enough back then to cut a deal with Bride's employer, Guglielmo Marconi, the inventor of the wireless. Marconi sent a message to Bride on the Carpathia, and it read, "Stop, say nothing, hold your story for dollars in four figures." So Harold Bride gets to New York, a Times reporter meets him on board, and the Times gets this incredible story from him about how the band played on the deck until the end, and how a stoker broke into the wireless room and tried to steal Bride's life jacket, and how Bride had to beat him senseless.
Wow. And what about Carlos Hurd, who was on the Carpathia working for Hearst?
Well, Hurd, a good journalist that he was, he spent the trip interviewing Titanic survivors and hiding his notes from the crew. He wrote up his stories and put them in a cigar box rigged with champagne corks as floats. And when the ship reached the harbor and Hurd spotted a Hearst editor in a tugboat, he hurled the cigar box into the water. The editor fished it out and rushed it back to the newsroom in Lower Manhattan. And before the Carpathia had even docked, an extra edition of the New York World was on the street with the banner headline, "Titanic Boilers Blew Up, Breaking Her in Two After Striking Berg."
Wow, not quite as fast as the internet, but for its day, pretty darn fast. Thanks, Jim.
Sure.
For more on how the New York Press covered the sinking of the Titanic, go to our website, WNYC.org.
Lord, we're gonna die. It was sad when that great ship went down.